So, here goes. Hey, Brent, can you just add to this way? Or no, one of you. Okay, yeah. Okay, that's good. oops, did I turn it on? So periodically, we like to offer one of these Dharma seminar series on one of the chants in our chant book. We're calling it a field guide to the chant book. Because, you know, we chant these chants when we have our services, and often they're not so easy to understand. Have you noticed that? this past year or so, we've looked at the Heart Sutra, which is the one we chant most often, and Harmony of Difference and Equality. But the one that we have never tackled before, ever, is Song of the Jewel Mirror Samadhi. And it's one that we don't chant all that often. But we don't want to neglect it. We try not to leave it out, because it's a very significant early text in Soto Zen, or in Chinese Soto, which is Caodong Zen. When we first encounter this one, we are likely to chant it through and then say, "What was that all about?" and because this is the first night, I'm going to actually pause this and let's chant it through together. Not chant it. So what was that all about? a silver bowl filled with snow. Baba Wawa. Tethered colts and trapped rats. As with most Zen texts, we could use a little help decoding this one. Maybe even more help than most. So, with a little help ourselves, we will try to uncover the wisdom and the beauty of this ancient poem. Help from Taigen Dan Leighton. This is a wonderful book. I'm really enjoying it. It just came out last year. It's called This Is It, Dongshan and the Practice of Suchness. Taigen Leighton is a teacher in Chicago and a scholar, and he's from our lineage of Suzuki Roshi. And trained in San Francisco Zen Center for years. So this I found very helpful, along with a couple of other sources. The Song of the Jewel Mirror Samadhi is believed to have been written by Dongshan Liangjie, who this book is about, who founded the Caodong School of Zen in Tang Dynasty China, so that was the 9th century, long time ago. Unlike Dogen, who founded Soto Zen in Japan 500 years later, there are no records of Dongshan's writing. None at all. Most texts of that era were not recorded until well after the teachers had died. In Dongshan's case, though, it's particularly a long time. The earliest existing compilation of his recorded sayings, this is an English translation, did not appear until 800 years after he had died. Though many of the stories appeared in some of the earlier collections of koans, or in texts called Transmission of the Lamp. Transmission of the Lamp texts were stories starting with the Buddha, the story of the Buddha's enlightenment, and then telling the enlightenment stories of each of the ancestors in succession, from the Buddha to his first disciple, to that disciple's first disciple, to that one's, to that one's. And these texts, transmission of the lamp, meaning the transmission of the light of enlightenment, were used to kind of construct an authentic, unbroken line of transmission from the Buddha, which was often manipulated, not historically accurate. Along with many of the stories and sayings, the record of Dongshan, includes a number of his teaching poems, the Song of the Jewel Mirror Samadhi being one. But this poem does not appear in any texts before the year 1119, so it's long after he lived. Presumably Zen teacher who first published it claimed that it had been transmitted secretly from teacher to teacher over the generations, that it was part of the transmission ritual. Be that as it may, it has been studied as Dongshan's poem ever since. Before we look at the poem in more detail, I want to talk a little bit about Dongshan himself. He lived from 807 to 869, and he was a contemporary of the great Rinzai master Linchi, who founded Rinzai Zen, the two main schools that have continued to this day. Virtually nothing is known about his family background, but the first story told in the record of Dongshan tells of an incident in his childhood when he was reading the Heart Sutra with his tutor, and he came to the words, "No eyes, no ears, no nose, no tongue, no body, no mind." Most of you are familiar with those lines from the Heart Sutra. And the young Liang Jie, that was his given name, said, "But I have eyes, ears, a nose, a tongue, and so forth. Why does the sutra say they don't exist?" That's a question some of you may have asked too, when you first encountered the Heart Sutra. But Liang Jie's tutor was so impressed by the boy's probing mind that he said, "I am not capable of being your teacher." He said, "You should go off to a Zen master and ask him." So the young boy did that, and he went to a monastery and took novice precepts, and then was fully ordained at the age of 21. I think this story foreshadows his lifelong interest in reconciling the paradox of the reality of the absolute, oneness, unity, with the which is the perspective of sometimes called emptiness, right? With the reality of the relative, the particularity of our day-to-day life. From the perspective of the absolute, as the Heart Sutra says, all phenomena are empty. Or perhaps a more helpful word is boundless, having no separate existence in space or time, all phenomena arising and passing within a web of interconnection with all other phenomena. That's what emptiness means in this, in Zen language. And at the same time, this lectern, though it was once a tree, a living tree, is now a hard object. And if I dropped it on my toe, I would say, "Ouch," because I'm a living body, and my living body will alert itself that it's been damaged. And that's the relative world. Going back to young Liang Jie, once he was fully ordained, he traveled, as monks, young monks did in those days, from one monastery to another, searching for a teacher to train with. And the question that led him to his primary teacher, Yunyan, was a question about non-sentient beings teaching the Dharma and how we can hear their teachings. There was a kind of debate in early Buddhism at that time. Some schools said non-stones and trees and grasses and fences and can all preach, teach the Dharma, speak the Dharma. And others said, oh no, they can't. So this quest resulted in a wonderful sequence of stories that Dogen wrote about hundreds of years later in a chapter of his masterwork, Treasury of the True Dharma Eye, called Insentient Beings Speak the Dharma. And we used that a couple of years ago for our yearly Dogen retreat. It's one of my favorites, because of course I feel like I've been hearing the insentient beings and non-human beings speak the Dharma since before I knew what Dharma was. You know, from childhood, they were my first teachers, probably. So I'm particularly fond of Dongshan because of that, his engagement with that question. But that's for another time. He studied with Yunyan for some years, and then he went traveling again. Before he left his teacher, Yunyan, he asked, later on, if I am asked to describe your teaching, how should I respond? Your reality, he says, but meaning his teaching. How should I respond? And Yunyan paused and then replied, just this is it. Dongshan remained silent, pondering his teacher's words. And then Yunyan added, you are now in charge of this great matter. You must be most thoroughgoing. So Dongshan took his leave. He wasn't quite sure what it was his teacher had just said to him. But later, along his way, he was wading across a stream. He looked down and saw his own reflection. And as the record says, awakened to the meaning of the previous exchange. Here he is. That's on the cover of the Record of Dongshan. He's crossing the stream with his staff. Looks a little older than I would have thought. And as Zen masters did in those days, he composed a verse. They were always composing enlightenment verses. Right? So here's his. He said, don't seek from others, or you'll be far estranged from self. I now go on alone. Everywhere I meet it. It now is me. I now am not it. One must understand in this way to merge with suchness. Suchness. You won't find that in an English dictionary, I don't think. Sometimes it's called thusness. Thusness, suchness. It's the way Buddhist scholars have decided to translate a Sanskrit word, tatata, which could also be translated as ultimate truth, ultimate reality, the source, the unattainable. One of the names of the Buddha is the Tathagata, or thus come one. Awakening to suchness implies directly apprehending the truth of reality in the moment, which includes both the absolute and the relative. Merging with suchness could be called merging of difference and unity. That's the title of the other chant I mentioned, a poem by an earlier Zen master named Sherdo, which we also chant. In Dongshan's verse, where he says, it is now, or I go on alone everywhere I meet it. It now is me, I am not it. That it can apparently also be read in Chinese as him. So it has a double meaning, referring both to reality as it is, right now, and also to Yunyan, his teacher. So he's saying, I go on alone now, everywhere I meet him. My teacher is all around me, and everything I meet is my teacher. It is now me. I now am not it. Oh, these lines express his realization that even as he leaves his teacher behind, his teacher is boundless. The teachings of the Dharma are all around him. His teacher is in the stream as he crosses it, in the willow trees lining the shore, in the birds singing among the branches. It now is me, I now am not it. Those lines kind of prefigure the lines that we just read in the Jhumir Samadhi. You are not it, but in truth it is you. Dongshan sees his reflection and realizes that all conceptions of the self are mutable, changeable, fleeting, like images in the water. And yet, at the same time, he is utterly interconnected with the boundless reality of the stream, the spring breeze, the grasses springing up from the soil, right there as a living being in that moment. So Dongshan's teachings on thusness form the core of this poem, Song of the Jhumir Samadhi. So I wanted to give you a little background on how he came to value them so, thusness teachings. So now let's plunge into the text. First the title, The Jewel Mirror. The jewel mirror, we could say, is our Buddha nature, our true nature, unbounded by conditioning, unobscured by greed, hatred, and delusion. You know, who are we without all our conditioning, you know? All our conditioning from generations of human karma, our own upbringing, our own culture. Who are we when all that drops away? When we look in the jewel mirror. When we see with our Dharma eye, we see Buddha nature reflected all around us, in each other, in all beings, sentient and insentient, as our own reflection. Maybe that's what Dongshan saw in the stream as he waded across. And then jewel mirror samadhi, samadhi being that unobstructed state, unclouded, clear heart and mind, from which we see the jewel mirror. So let's see what Dongshan has to say in his poem. Could somebody read the... I added numbers. There aren't typically numbers, but I added numbers to the verses just to help us keep track of where we are. Could someone read the first one, please? Todd?
Of thusness has been intimately communicated by Buddhas and ancestors. Now you have it, so keep it well.
Thank you. So he's referring to that transmission from teacher to student, teacher to student over the generations. But it's very clear in the discussions about transmission in Zen, in the texts, that in fact there is nothing actually transmitted. You could say there's a mutual dropping away of obstruction, a mutual recognition of thusness, a seeing each other in the mirror, and certain ceremonial enactments of that between teacher and student. A recognition of reality just as it is right now. In the very first story in these Transmission of the Lamp collections is the story of the Buddha, transmission to his first student or his disciple Mahakashapa, when amongst a large assembly, the Buddha holds up a flower, and Mahakashapa is the only one who smiles. And that was the first transmission, without a single word. The line, "Now you have it, keep it well," is kind of reminiscent of Yunyan's parting words to Dongshan. "You are now in charge of this great matter. You must be thoroughgoing." And then in the Book of Serenity, which is one of the koan collections, Dongshan says something similar to his student, Caoshan. After teaching him the Jewel Mirror Samadhi verses, he says, "Keep it well and don't let it be cut off. Later, if you meet a true vessel of the Dharma, only then should you pass it on." So that kind of supports the theory that these verses were part of a kind of secret transmission, perhaps. But today, they have become part of the liturgy chanted in Soto Zen temples all around the world. So in a sense, now we all have it, the teaching of suchness, and we all have the responsibility to maintain our practice and carry it forward. What they're saying, you know, keep it well, it means don't rest on your laurels. Don't think because you have a kind of opening experience at some point, and to think, oh, I've got it, I'm enlightened. You know, because as soon as you think that, it will slip away. You have to maintain your practice. Could someone read the next four lines, please? Yeah, Remick?
"Feeling a silver ball with snow, hiding a heron in the moonlight, taken as similar, they are not the same. When you mix them, you know where they are."
So these are beautiful images, but it's not necessarily immediately clear what he means, what he's referring to.
What's a heron?
A heron is a tall water bird, long legs, yeah, beautiful kind of feathers. I actually think this is probably a white egret, more likely. I would have translated as a white egret. It's the same character for both because they're related kinds of water birds. Yeah, but it's a white. It's definitely referring to a white bird. And these images are being used to kind of express the dialectic between the universal and the particular, the absolute and the relative. In Dongshan's images, the silver bowl and the moon symbolize the universal, the undifferentiated, also the awakened mind. And the snow and the white heron, or white or egret, are the particularities of the arising of in the phenomenal world. The second two lines in that verse describe how an awakened person sees phenomena as arising without judgment, without discrimination, just as they are, but at the same time able to see the distinctions, able to see the white hair, white egret in the moonlight, able to see the snow in the silver bowl, not losing sight of the white bird in the moonlight, but not being disappointed when it's gone. The image of the snow and the silver bowl alludes to another transmission story from ancient India, when the great Indian sage Nagarjuna presented his student Kanadeva with a silver bowl of water. And Kanadeva took a needle and dropped it in the water. Imagine the needle dropping into the water and disturbing the surface of the still water. It's an image of a phenomena arising into clear awareness, the awareness of a clear mind. A single needle dropping into still water. It might be the quavering single note of a varied thrush's song. That's what we hear early in the morning at our house. Do you know what a varied thrush sounds like? It's this mournful, quavering single note. It's a very haunting sound. Varied thrush looks kind of like it's related to a robin, right? But it has a black V, and it lives in the forest. It doesn't come out in the open except a little bit in the winter. Or the piercing cry of a frightened child. A needle dropping into still water. An awakened body-mind responds naturally, appropriately, to a rising of phenomena. Could someone read the next four lines, please? Yeah, please.
The meaning is not in the words, yet it responds to the inquiring impulse. Move and you are trapped. Miss and you fall into doubt and vacillation.
Words fall short of the experience in the moment, and yet we must inquire. We must respond. Move and you are trapped, miss and you fall into doubt and vacillation. Do you ever feel like that? You know, when we speak and act impulsively, we can get ourselves into a big jam, right? On the other hand, if we're seized by anxiety, second-guessing ourselves and other people, then we can fall into a paralysis, right? And one more verse. Doug, could you read the four? Yeah, four.
Turning away and touching are both wrong, for it is like a massive fire. Just to depict it in literary form is to stain it with defilement.
So not turning away, not clinging on. Can we meet each moment of our experience just as it is? That's what he's saying. The vast wonder of thusness is like a massive fire, he's saying. As soon as we try and put it into words, we've already stained it, we've already distorted it. Let's do one more. Ben, can you read that one?
It is bright just at midnight. It doesn't appear at dawn. It acts as a guide for beings. Its use removes all pains.
Thank you. So he's using this imagery of light and darkness, which evokes some lines from that merging in difference of difference and unity, which some of you are familiar with. The lines are, in the light there is darkness, but don't take it as darkness. In the dark there is light, but don't see it as light. Light and dark oppose one another like the front and back foot in walking. You can't have one without the other. In the light we can see distinctions, and in the darkness distinctions disappear. Yet within light, so light is the phenomenal world where phenomena arise and pass away. But within that light, all is connected, unified. And within the darkness of unity, particularity is there. We just can't see it. So Dongshan is expressing this paradoxical reality. It is bright just at midnight. It doesn't appear at dawn. Deeply seeing into this non-dual reality of thusness, we are released from suffering. Just this is it. Now, it's really important to realize that this kind of spacious seeing of thusness is not a passive thing. I really like what Tigan Layton says in his book. He says, just this is it is not static, but just this is alive. Just this is constantly changing. Even if you experience some thorough, deep realization about just this, you need to keep paying attention. Upright sitting is alive. You are not it, but honestly, it is you, and practicing it is dynamic. A danger in the phrase just this is that it may sound passive, like if I just accept everything as it is, then that would be it. But that is one of the classic four traps of spiritual practice, just accepting things as they are, just going with the flow, and then whatever happens is fine. That does not work, and it is not the just this that Dongshan is describing. So, let's stop there for now. And what I'd like you to do is get into small groups. You can look back over these lines a bit first, but think about your own phenomenal life, you know, your own daily life. And think about some situation that, what would, and think about what it would be like if you could see it as thusness in its full spacious reality, just as it is, including both the emptiness of interconnection, of vast interconnection, and also the particularity. Imagine what that would be like. How could that release suffering?